Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, the best children's books of all time. Scholastic's Parent and Child magazine recently released a list of the 100 greatest books for children. And it spans really a variety of genres and target ages. The editors made the selections from a population of about 500 titles that were submitted from literacy experts and also what they call moms, really, because I think moms are the ones who buy most of the books for children and do the reading, although dads, we shouldn't exclude dads because dads do that as well. We'll look at what the top 11 were, and we'll spend this hour, and won't this be fun, talking with you about your favorite children's book. I have some friends who only read children's books because they say, that's all you need to read. There's so much fine literature and inspirational stories that you don't need to go much beyond this. We'll be welcoming phone calls. We have two guests with us from Scholastic. Ann Bartus is currently a senior editor in Scholastic's classroom and community group specializing in children's literature, early literacy, and family engagement. She holds a master's degree from NYU, where she focused her research on trends in children's, in young and adult literature. We'll be sure and talk with Anna about what the trends are now. Anna, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, there you are.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing great.
Good. We're going to have a lot of fun this hour. Nick Friedman is also with us. Nick is the editor-in-chief of Scholastic Parent and Child magazine. It's a national magazine. I'm sure everybody in this audience is familiar with it. They have 1.3 million subscribers, mostly moms, and they help moms help their children succeed in school and life. Prior to Parent and Child, he was a senior editor at Sports Illustrated for Kids magazine, where his annual series, My Favorite Teacher, won two Educational Press Association awards for distinguished achievement. Nick, thank you so much for being with us.
Kathleen, it's great to be here. Hello, Wisconsin.
Hey, our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, put your comments on Facebook, too. We're going to get a book thing going here, children's books. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Anna, what's your favorite children's book?
Oh, wow, what a question that is. you know what? It changes every day.
Really?
Yeah, I have some that revolve, but that's what reading is. It's falling in love with a great story, and I'm usually in love with the one that I'm working on that moment. Sometimes it's a book that am revisiting, so I'm falling back in love with a book, but yeah, it's a revolving door for me. I love children's books.
Nick, what about you?
Well, I like a book that's a little bit more obscure. I would bet that most of your audience does not know it. It's called Animal Cafe. It was written in the late 70s by John Stadler. And it's a really fun little adventure book about a cat and dog that take over a restaurant every time the owner leaves at night.
I love it.
And invite other cats and dogs over to play.
Oh, I love it. What a great idea for a children's book.
I agree. I've read that one many, many times to my kids over the years.
Oh. Do both of you continue to read children's books? Do you find them endlessly inspirational and fun and meaningful, perhaps?
Well, you know, at Scholastic, of course, it's the world's largest publisher and distributor of children's books in the world. So we are exposed to a lot of titles that come through our office. And at Parent and Child magazine every month, we recommend about four or five for parents to bring to their kids. So myself and the editors of the magazine were very much steeped in these books. Having said that, of course, the one that everybody is talking about is The Hunger Games.
Yes.
And I, you know, it had such a buzz out in the world and within the office that I sat down and read it in one night. So that's the one that's most prevalent on my mind, the first title in the series.
I have not. Brett gave me the book on tape, and I haven't had a chance to read it because I'm reading other books yet or listen to it. What do you think of The Hunger Games, Anna, and why is it such a big deal?
Well, I think it's absolutely fantastic. As Nick said, I sat down and read it in a few hours. I could not put it down.
Really?
I love Katniss. She is such a relatable character. She's so strong and yet so so willing to learn and to pick up new information. She's vulnerable, which I think most readers are, and it's very easy to put yourself, even if your circumstances are very, very different on the outside, it's easy to really relate to what she's going through as a person, as a teenager, as a human being, as an older sister, as, you know, a citizen concerned about the welfare of her people. So I think that's part of what it is. It's that even though the situation is very different, the bottom line is very similar to what we go through every day as human beings.
Mm-hmm. What is it that makes something take off? The same thing happened with Rowling's books, of course, that something happened that, I don't know if we can understand it to this day or not, but when you have young people waiting in line at bookstores for books to be released and staying up until midnight, something's going on, and I think most people would say something good's going on. Nick?
Oh, well, we would have to agree with that. You know, sometimes you can't, I mean, you can't put your finger on something exactly, but I think that J.K. Rowling, in particular, she really seemed to understand the way children think about the world and the fantasy of the world in general, and how much there is to explore. And I think she tapped into something there at a young age that really you know, made that those tiles explode with children.
I agree. I think there are some universal principles, too, that are going on, because if you look at both, for instance, Collins' Hunger Games and Rowling's Harry Potter, you find that they are both drawing from a history of literature that has been popular for a long time, whether it be, you know, just the classic hero's journey, the journey of figuring out life and understanding what life's beginnings and ends mean. Or just looking at the idea of possibility, which, you know, a lot of people call fantasy, but I like to think of it as the concept of possibility, that the world is full of possibilities, and there's a new one at every turn. So I think these books really inspire people to look at their world in a new way.
Yeah, I would have to agree with Anna. When I said unexplored, I think that's what you were getting at. It's like it's a great wide world out there. And, you know, we wrote a cover story about J.K. Rowling to go with this issue about the 100 greatest books. And as we say at the end, her ability to tap into the thoughts, feelings, and everyday concerns of children are extremely real and recognizable, and I think that is a key to the popularity behind the Harry Potter series.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so glad to see that my book, and Rhonda would agree with me, we both had this as number one. Brett Jasper's is Maniac McGee by Jerry Spinelli. We'll talk about that in a moment. But number one on the list, and I just think it's a beautiful story. I cry every time I read it. I cry every time I see the film, is E.B. White's Charlotte's Web.
Absolutely. And if you you could understand in that case why it was number one with us. You know, for children, of course, it's a wonderful adventure and discovery about life and death, to put it very bluntly. But for parents who get a chance to pick it up and either reread it from when they were kids or read it to their children, they are enchanted all over again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're getting at. We recommend reading that book whether you have children or not, as a matter of fact.
When was it written? It's pretty old, isn't it?
1952, I believe, is when it was first published.
So 60 years old this year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a beauty. It's just a beauty of a book.
When I turned 65, not ready for retirement.
I keep thinking I want to name my animals, or maybe we should start naming our children after some of the characters in that book, right? Wilbur, Charlotte, those are good names.
They're excellent names.
Yes, and if you have a spider or a cat, maybe they can spell out some particular words, just like in the story itself.
Right. Let's talk about some of the other ones that made the top 10. I don't know what they are in exact order, but those that you found particularly captivating, and you as well, were so happy to see they were in the top 10. Anna?
Yes. Well, you know, like I said, I really have a very hard time picking a favorite, but I have a soft spot in my heart for Where the Wild Things Are.
Yes.
I think I still love reading it. I don't know if that says more about the book or about me, but I just love how the book demystifies monsters and celebrates and nurtures imagination and self-actualization. I love the illustrations. I love the idea of closing your eyes and seeing a whole new world as you dream in your sleep. So that one for me was a particular favorite.
Nick, you agree?
Well, I agree with whatever Anna likes. That's her taste, just like any other reader out there. For me, The Snowy Day, which is number four on our top 10 list, is it's just so simple and elegant. You know, the illustrations have these kind of squared off look to them, as though they've been cut out from almost from colored paper and pasted together. And it's such a warm, warm story. That book turns 50 this year. And, of course, it was a Caldecott winner in 1963. And it just holds up so well and just so warm and wonderful.
What, when you win an award like that, the Caldecott Award, does that guarantee a book's success, Nick?
Well, you know, guarantee, that's an interesting word. I think it helps, you know, promote it, certainly, and it gives it a little bit of extra cachet. But, you know, there are so many wonderfully illustrated and written books out there that, you know, somebody's got to rise to the top. It's like the Academy Awards, right? It's an honor to be nominated, and then somebody's got to win.
Well, I think one thing you have to remember, too, about awards when you're looking at books is that some of them are very current things. So one thing that surprised us as we were going through this list was that a lot of the great classic books may not have an award, and that would surprise some people until they find out that some of these awards started after certain books were published. So I think it's a great meter of what you know, what a book contains, but don't discount books that don't have awards. There are some really great books out there that have been yet to be discovered, and maybe you'll be the first person to see something really amazing in a book that hasn't been noticed yet.
And then within your own family, you can hand out your own awards.
Yeah,
oh, that's a good idea. What a good idea that is. Green Eggs and Ham is on the list, number 7. I love this story, the backstory. I didn't know that the publisher, Bennett Cerf, had bet Dr. Seuss $50 that he couldn't use just 50 words, and I didn't know there were just 50 words, and almost all of them one-syllable words in that book.
That's yeah, it is quite phenomenal. It's an interesting fact about that book. I think that, as we say about that, the rhyming and the repeating of all those words within Green Eggs and Ham make it instantly popular with a little kid picking it up for the first time and wanting to read it again and again.
Definitely, I can't help but smile a little bit knowing that Dr. Seuss was very clever in his use of those 50 words, because sometimes those same words pop up on every page. So he got his use out of those 50 words, but it's a great way to learn those words for the first time if you're a new reader, to have them reiterated on each page in a new and different way in a different setting.
So. Yeah. You mentioned reading a book again and again. Most of those on the top 100 that you have published are books that we read again and again, Nick?
Well, yes, I mean, that's true. They are books that you'll go back to. Some of them are, you know, timeless. So you'll read them. You may want to read them again and again within your own household, but you know, in the public in general, of course, they're read repeatedly. But I should point out that within that 100 list, there are many books that you may not have expected to see on there, and we would hope that you would, you know, welcome them into your home and share them with your children, and then read those again and again as well.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls, and we'll take them in a moment. A few lines are open. I can guarantee you they will get crowded, because books are one of our favorite topics, and children's book, I know, strikes your fancy and your heart and your memory. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Before we pause for just a moment, here's a Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show message. I will date myself here, Becky says, but growing up, I loved The Boxcar Children. I agree with her, and my son loved that, too. I dreamed of being on my own and living in the deserted boxcar down the road. As a teacher and a parent, Charlotte's Web was number one for her. I love that series. Did that make the top 100?
You know, The Boxcar Children is a wonderful series. I was just kind of having flashbacks to my own reading experience with The Boxcar Children in my youth. It's it's a really great series. It's full of adventure, full of great ideas. It's one of the books that we would have loved to include on the 100 books list, but having 100, we had to narrow it down. So,
yeah, to that point, it was a labor of love to narrow down from 500, more than 500 titles, down to 100. And so some titles that are not on the list, this list is ever evolving. They could be appearing on the list the next time we do it. But it was a great joy and a difficult decision often.
Oh, I am sure. We're going to welcome phone calls in just a moment. We have two guests with us, Nick Friedman, editor-in-chief, Scholastic Magazine, and Anna Bartis, senior editor at Scholastic, and we're talking about what they've done, and that's combed through 500 suggestions from people who know what they're talking about for the best 100 children's books of all time. And we're asking you that question this hour. So join our conversation. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls, Mark in Wausau. Hi, Mark.
Well, good morning. Wonderful show. I would like to mention the book by Thornton Burgess, Old Mother West Wind. And I received the book from my grandmother as a small boy, and I believe the published date was 1917. But what really made the book nice, it was each character had a full-page color illustration. And I'm wondering, have they ever republished that book?
Nick, do you know?
Are you talking about Scholastic publishing it?
I don't remember the publishing company, but just anyone that with those nice, old-fashioned, colored pages, illustrations.
Ah. Well, you know, one thing I absolutely love about working in children's literature is that there is so much wonderful literature out there, and people are constantly asking me if I have heard of or read their favorite books. And for this particular one, I have to admit it that I have not, but I am so excited to go out and try to find it. I love hearing about new books to read, and I think especially books that are published as far back as 1917, a lot of them hold such amazing insights and different worlds for us to look at. You mentioned the illustrations. Some of those illustrations are just unparalleled in the styles that are being done now. So I really appreciate your recommendation.
You know, and 1917, that is quite a long time, but within our 100 list, we do take a few steps back in years beyond that to Anne of Green Gables, a classic that was written or published in 1908.
And Wind in the Willows as well, which is also a great book.
So there is a lot of classic, wonderful literature out there to be discovered. That's the beauty of books.
Didn't I read that Anne of Green Gables is the best-selling book ever?
You know, there's a lot of best-selling books ever. If you do just a quick Google search, there are several books that pop up as the top. Anne of Green Gables is certainly one of them. It has stood the test of time. It just keeps, you know, it kept popping up, and everybody who saw that we had it on the list concurred that this was just a great pick. It's what Anne of Green Gables is one of my revolving top 10. So not just because our names are similar.
Thanks, Mark, for the call. Jane in Oconto. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Are you there? Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Does your list contain the Phantom Tollbooth? I'm afraid I don't remember the author off the top of my head.
Yeah,
that would be done by Jules Pfeiffer and Norton Jewster. And yes, the Phantom Tollbooth is on our list. It's a great book. It's full of just incredibly fun wordplay. It's a great vocabulary learner, and it's also so imaginative about, you know, a young boy who suddenly has a whole world pop up in the middle of his bedroom. So that's a great book for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jane. Jennifer in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi. My favorite book when I was a toddler, my mother read me back in the 70s. My mother used to read me a Sesame Street book. I'm sure it probably didn't make your top 100, but it was called The Monster at the end of this book. And it was very short, and it's appropriate for very, very small children. But it's about Grover trying to warn the reader not to turn the next page because there was a monster at the end of this book. And he tries, he builds a brick wall and he puts chains on the pages, and he's begging you with every turn of the page not to turn the next page. And I remember being frightened as a small child, but in a good way, in a fun way, because I knew that I was safe. But it was always neat to see if my mom was going to turn the page, and she'd kind of tease us a little bit, and we'd beg her not to turn it. And no matter how many times she read it, we always knew it was Grover at the end of the book. But we loved the voices and all the drama that went into whether or not we were going to turn the next page. And I read it to my boys when they were little as well.
Mm.
That is an excellent book. And actually, I don't know if you know this, but it's Living a Whole New Life as an e-book, which, as you can imagine, talking about the suspense and the interactivity of the book itself, you can imagine how much that book comes alive in e-book format. So I would really encourage all of you out there to take a look at the Monster at the End of This Book e-book version.
Also, the way your mom read that book to you is really remarkable. It's a great way to bond, of course, books and reading with your kids to bond, and then reading in that kind of style with the sense of anticipation, even if you're a kid and you know what's coming next, it just really drives home the fact that books can teach you so much about life itself and about emotions, how those operate in daily life. If you go on our website, scholastic.com 100 books, you'll see we have some guidance about reading at different age levels, different grade levels, and that kind of thing, interacting so closely and snuggling together over a book and helping your child feel safe is in there as well.
Thank you so much, Jennifer, for the call. We go to Melody in Oshkosh. Hi, Melody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for this program. I am smiling ear to ear because the Grover book was one of my favorites, and I was reliving each page.
Aww.
And the tickling of the feet as she was describing it. It was great. It's amazing how many books you start to relive just by talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
That is a beauty. One of the things we wanted to do with this list was to get parents and families talking about books. As a matter of fact, one of the ideas for doing this kind of a list came to me after I had a conversation with my 16-year-old son at dinner. We got talking about the books he loved when he was little, when I would read to him and my wife would read to him. And he recalled so many titles that I just thought this is a natural for Scholastic Parent and Child magazine, and I would love to share this with other families. And that's a large part of what drove us to create this list.
Melody, what are your favorite children's books?
Well, I am a rereader. I save all the books that I fall in love with the characters, and I reread them, whether it's yearly or, you know, annually, et cetera. Louisa May Alcott's Little Women mm-hmm. has always been one of my favorites. And, you know, I cry knowing Beth is going to die every time. And then there were books that I was trying to remember. Gosh, what couldn't I put down when I was, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12? The Encyclopedia Brown books, that series. My Friend the Vampire, long before the vampire stuff ever hit the sands. My Friend the Vampire, it's by a German author, Angela Summers. I don't know how to pronounce that, like Buddenbrook or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those have always been just favorites. Pick up. I have it at the house now, and I'm a parent, and I can't wait to read some of these to my kids when they get a little bit more age appropriate. And of course,
Melanie, how
the
old
Harry
are
Potter
you
series. Loved reading that, and I started reading that when I was in early college. And at the same time, my dad, who was early 60s, was reading the same thing, and it was great to be able to talk to each other about it. And I borrowed the first one that I ever read from a grade schooler that I was babysitting.
Hmm.
And so it just to be able to just gap those ages is remarkable.
Nick wanted to know how old your children are.
Oh, I'm sorry. My daughter is 5, and my son is 2.
Ah, so do you have an age in mind for when you will read to your 5-year-old, read Harry Potter to your 5-year-old?
She's coming on it. She loves the movies, but we've only let her watch 1, 2, and 3.
Uh-huh.
And so she knows the characters, but there's so much more depth and richness, I think, in the characters within the books and some of the nuances that you miss in the movie that I think she's close.
Right now,
she's still avidly, you know, loves the pictures. And I've tried a few other books, like the bunny series, the Bunnicula series,
the rabbit
that sucks the essence out of all the vegetables.
Those are so much fun.
Yeah, it's interesting about Harry Potter. You know, J.K. Rowling herself said she was going to wait to read her books to her daughter until she reached the age of 7. But while her daughter was at school, her friends kept coming up to her and saying, hey, what's happening in the next book? Or who did this? Who did that? And Rowling herself said she realized that her daughter was sort of outside the social cool crowd and would need to kind of help her bridge that gap. And so she ended up reading to her daughter at age 7.
Here's an email.
Reading Harry Potter to her daughter.
From Reagan in Denmark. Can you recommend a few books for my 4-year-old? We've done the Little House books, Charlotte's Web, Stuart Little, Winnie the Pooh, Some Boxcar Children, Wind in the Willows, Indian in the Cupboard, adapted versions of Dr. Doolittle, Robinson Crusoe, and Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. He's into battles, and we're into quality literature.
Wow. So your daughter is reading these books at age 4?
Age 4 is what Reagan says, yeah.
That is amazing.
Well, there are a lot of really great books out there. I don't know if you've checked out some of the stuff by Peter H. Reynolds. His works are really deep and yet simple and very inviting and fun. He has The Dot and Ish, and both of those books are really great. I would highly recommend those. If you're reading a little higher, you can always look at some really good quality nonfiction. There are a lot of really inspiring life stories out there, such as When Marian Sang, which is one of our books on our list, about the life of Marian Anderson, and a myriad of other books. Wilma Unlimited is a great story. I think there's a lot to be found, and you can find even more on our, scholastic.com/100books. Their books are listed there by age group and as well as by different categories such as fiction, nonfiction, and different kinds of stories. So I highly recommend, all of the books that landed on there are good quality books, and I highly recommend any of them.
Dave and Wanaki, hi.
Hi. Hey, I was wondering if your guest had read the Salman Rushdie book, Harun and the Sea of Stories. That was printed about 10 years ago.
I think I did. I'm trying to remember. Salman Rushdie is very, he comes from a different culture, which is great to introduce that into your family and a different perspective on the world. And certainly was very lyrical and fantastic, from what I recall.
Yes, I greatly enjoyed it. It was full of humor, and he's a wonderful storyteller.
Yep, there's no doubt about it.
What was your favorite thing about that book?
Oh, I guess the personalities of his father, Harun's father, and I think there was another character named Mr. Butt. And they were comical and fantastic and inventive.
It's always interesting when an author who generally writes for an adult audience, writes a children's book. It's just interesting to bring that perspective into things. I think about Charlotte's Web and E.B. White, who wrote, White wrote this wonderful book called This Is New York, which is just written in the late 40s, I believe, which is just a wonderful way of looking at New York from the outsider's point of view. And so here he is with Charlotte's Web. Of course, he's not an animal, but he brings a very unique perspective into that.
There's even number 93 on your list. We were talking about some nonfiction, which I think is important, too. We the Kids, the Preamble to the Constitution of the United States. I don't think I've ever seen that particular book, but it sounds like a good one.
How about that? We decided to to mix in some great nonfiction titles into this list because there's a high demand for it today, especially in schools, and also because there are so many quality titles out there that a lot of parents may not even be aware of now. And so those were some really kind of interesting things to mix in.
Well, We the Kids is one of my particular favorites because the illustrations just make the book so inviting from the cover all the way through to the end, and it introduces to children who might find old historical documents less than appealing. It suddenly opens up this world of looking at the language and looking at it in a different context that allows them to understand how it applies to their lives. So That recommendation actually came from Ruth Cullum, who is the resident trait lady. She's a writing expert, and she loved how it proves that old historical documents don't have to be boring. They can be a lot of fun, and they really have a lot of relevance for our lives.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dave, so much for your call. Ron in East Troy, hi.
Hi. I just want to make a pitch for a book that starts out being a kid's book but ends up being a wife book, and that's The Little Prince. That's just one of my favorites. I've worn it out on my kids, and my family knows when I die on my coffin, my ragged copy of The Little Prince, it's going to be there.
Oh, Ron.
What a wonderful book. I actually remember my grandmother reading that book to me, and it was truly inspiring, just as you say. I think you're hitting on something, and some of the other callers have hit on too, is that, you know, children's books aren't just for children, partly because when we read them in our early years, they have such an impact on our life and who we are and who we see ourselves being that it's hard to see ourselves as anything but someone who has read and taken these books in. So I heartily agree with you. There are some books that I will definitely be taking with me to the other side.
Oh, thanks, Ron, so much for your call. Kay in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm really enjoying this program. When I taught ninth grade English at North Division the last few years, I taught, we had a unit on reading to children, which was one of the most rewarding things I did. Two books. I was really sorry to see that The Giving Tree is still on the list. I love Shel Silverstein's poems for children, but as far as I'm concerned, The Giving Tree embodies the Playboy philosophy. At the end, the little boy has grown to an old man, and the tree is just a stump. But the book I really especially want to say something about is Everett Anderson's Goodbye by Lucille Clifton, beautifully illustrated by Anne Grifalcone. And it ends, it's a little boy whose father has died, and she takes him through the five stages of grief, and it ends with something I've quoted so many times. Everett Anderson says, "I knew my daddy loved me through and through, and whatever happens when people die, love doesn't stop, and neither will I."
That is very moving. I'm very glad to have to become aware of that book. I just wanted to take a half step back for a moment on Shel Silverstein on The Giving Tree. It's interesting. We got a few comments about that book being on the top 10, and some people, you know, you can read that book in two very different ways, or many ways, in fact. But the one thing we say about it in our review, in our sort of blurb about it, is that it does provoke conversation, and that's an important part of any book, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I do. I was actually remember being surprised myself when I first read the book, and you know, I had to take a step back as you know, and as an editor, and look at what lies beneath. And I think what became apparent to me was that, you know, underneath the clear and simple text is a really complex fable about the joy of giving and the risks of taking too much. As a lot of fables do, they don't always end well. They end sometimes on a sour or a sad note, and I think that's a really great opportunity to take to look at the wide variety of discussion on topics from love to self-sacrifice to conservation and the environment that such a book can provoke. Because obviously, none of us would want the tree's fate to be, you know, the fate of our world. So I think it allows for some really great conversation on why that's not something that want to proliferate.
I was interested to see, and this is one of those life-changing books, I think, that when we read it, all of a sudden our mind goes to how could this happen in the world? We start thinking about the meaning of existence and human relationships and cruelty, etc. The Diary of Anne Frank, it's way up on the list, and it's a very important book for young people of a certain age, don't you think?
Absolutely. It's number 8 in our top 10 list. As we say about this book, there are a few more compelling reminders of the destructive power of hatred and prejudice than this candid and heartbreaking look inside the life of Holocaust victim Anne Frank. It's, you know, it is required reading in many schools, but it is very powerful. And the fact that the, you know, the protagonist, for lack of a better way of expressing that, is, you know, close to the reader's age at those upper levels.
Mm-hmm.
They can relate to it and draw a lot from it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think, you know, all future citizens and leaders of the world would benefit from taking a look inside Anne Frank's life and seeing just how much, how similar to them she is. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people, that spawns a lot of cruelty, is not being able to see other people as just as human as yourself. So this book really puts that out there on the line and in a very poignant and beautiful way.
And, you know, the diary sort of genre is something that many, many kids can relate to, you know, expressing their own thoughts, their deepest thoughts, fears, hopes. You know, it's a universal thing. And in schools today, of course, kids are encouraged to express themselves and dig deep and, share those moments. So, as a diary, it's a great learning device.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and certainly from that descended Zlata's diary, which was published in the early 90s about, you know, the girl in Sarajevo who lived through those tough times. And I can tell you that a couple of books that I read as a kid over and over again were sports diaries. And that really turned me on to reading.
That's great. Whatever turns you on to reading, right? Whatever it is. We're going to welcome more phone calls. We're talking about the 100 greatest children's book of all times. It's in Scholastic Magazine. If you'd like to see the list, the whole list, it's at scholastic.com/100books. You can also search Parent and Child's 100 Greatest Books for Kids on Facebook. Our guests are Nick Friedman, Editor-in-Chief, Scholastic, and Anna Bardas, who is Senior Editor at Scholastic. Our lines have been really busy. Kay, thank you so much for your call. One line is open right now at 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook address is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Tomorrow during this time period, we do a lot of books on this show. This is not a children's book, but Clint Hill will join us, Special Agent, United States Secret Service, who's written a very moving book. It took him a long time to be able to write this because he was so traumatized by the assassination of President Kennedy. The book is Mrs. Kennedy and Me. He was her primary Secret Service agent for 3 years. So that's tomorrow during this time period. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Hibby in South Milwaukee. Hi, Hibby.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. My recent favorite is Maniac McGee, and I got to it in a strange way. My grandson, 10-year-old grandson Ty, became my book advisor, and he had read Milkweed by Spinelli, and he really recommended it. So I read Milkweed and was just really, really moved. And then I looked on the book jacket for other Spinelli books, and there was Maniac McGee, and I said, that sounds good. And so I went to the Cudahy Library and got it and just finished it, and it's just wonderful. And as a matter of fact, I've ordered another Spinelli book, Crash. So we need to pay attention to kids. They're really smart, and they've got a pulse on what's really important, and we can sure learn a lot from them.
Mm. Did you talk to Brett? That's Brett's favorite book, too.
Yeah, that's I'm just enthralled with this. I hear so many things that connect with where the wild things are that I read to my kids, and where the book about the monster at the end of the book, I've read that book 1,000 times, and it is so connecting. You can almost see your life moving before you in a wonderful, reminiscent way if you've had children and grandchildren that you've been able to share these times with, and there's no better way to share than with a book, and I thank the people who are in the business that are keeping the books coming toward us. We
hear
really
you,
appreciate
hear you.
It.
I agree. Thank you so much
for
your call.
Hey, Ty, how old is your grandson again?
He's 10 years old, and he's an avid reader. And he had read that book, and so it also gives us a way to connect, because I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet, but I'd like to talk to him about the characters and what he thinks of in the book of Milkweed, of what he thinks of Yuri and who was the big influence and why did they do the things they did, and what a great way for someone who is way down the road to be able to talk to a 10-year-old and get such a fresh view of what life is and can be.
Hmm.
Well, you make a very good point. Books can bridge many things, including age or generations. You're absolutely right. And Jerry Spinelli, I think, is really great at capturing the inner life and drive of boys in particular. I remember reading Maniac McGee, which is, I think it's required in many, many schools. I read it a while ago and really enjoyed it and shared it with my son. Especially anything that can get boys reading, who are generally more reluctant readers than girls, and that if they can get them reading, then that's a great, great thing.
Well, I think also you hit on a really great point, which was that anything that can get the adults in a child's life to talk to those kids about books. I know when a child gets to the age of 10, 8, you know, even 9 these days, 9, 10, 11, 12, that it can be kind of difficult. But as you point out, there is so much to be gleaned from these books, even for the adult readers in kids' lives. And we had a couple of suggestions for things that you might want to even try with your grandson. One of them is to create a book club where, you know, you can do that even long distance over the phone or by email. It's where you read the same book and then talk about it and discuss it. You might go out for a special dinner, have, you know, go out and talk about books over pizza. And then another great idea is with the way that, you know, book blogging has become really popular lately, I highly recommend becoming co-authors. And by that I mean, you know, book reviewing is all the rage with tween and young adult books today. So turn book discussions with your child or grandchild into writing opportunities. You might even set up a blog and, you know, write reviews and share your opinions with the world. So that's great. I'm so glad that you found something to connect with him on. Books are wonderful that way.
They sure are.
They tie to tie for us.
Yeah. Thanks, Hibby, so much. Why, Nick, do you think boys are more reluctant readers?
Why are they? I mean, there are many reasons out there today that kids in general may not be reading as much as they were because they've got a number of, other things drawing their attention away. But boys in particular, it's an interesting thing.
Sometimes it has to do with content and interest, and boys are very hands-on, and so if you can find ways to make get books that your boys are interested in, get them reading. That's a good thing. One of our experts, Pam Allen, has written an excellent book called The Best Books for Boys. She is founder and executive director of Lit World, and she's done some really great work on books for boys, and you can find some great recommendations in her work, Best Books for Boys.
But I think, with Jerry Spinelli, if you find that right book that can turn a boy on to reading, that's huge, a huge win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we talk a lot about at Scholastic, finding that right book. If Harry Potter, which of course is a Scholastic title, it's number 6 in our top 10, we found in a study that reading any one of those books turned kids on to reading other books, not just Harry Potter. And so the greater point there is that you find the book that they love, that speaks to them, and you open the door.
Let's go to Sherry in Fort Atkinson. Hi.
Thank you very much for letting me get on the air. You can't let this show go by without talking about Roald Dahl. My sons loved Roald Dahl. I just counted what we had on the bookshelf. My sons are grown now, but we still have all the books, and we have 13 Roald Dahl books. I think our favorite is the big BFG, the Big Friendly Giant.
Oh, the BFG. I love that book, too. Yes, we have Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I mean,
Matilda is on our list, and we love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as well. That was such a hard decision. You know, every one of Dahl's books are amazing. I love Roald Dahl. I love his book about a boy. He's done some really great autobiographical stuff. So if you're interested in that and haven't yet read Dahl's autobiographical books, I think Flying Solo and About a Boy, apologies if the titles aren't exactly right, but those are great books as well. They're very fun and give a real insight into how the books became, you know, came to be from his story.
Right. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the BFG, the Dahl canon, all those books are just terrific, great choices. By the way, if anybody's keeping track, I share the same birthday as Roald Dahl, September 13th.
Well, we'll keep track of that.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome, Nick. Thanks, Sherry, for your call. Frank in Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Magnificent show.
Thanks.
I would like to ask your guests if any of the Anno books approached the 100th limit, and specifically Anno's Journey, which manages to be textless introduction to both the geography and history of Europe. And contains a visual adult novel in there as well while you're going over it with your child.
Oh, wow. That sounds tell me more about that book. I'm excited to learn more about it.
Anno is a Japanese children's illustrator.
Oh.
A-N-N-O.
Oh, okay.
And
that sounds wonderful. You know, I actually spent a year in Japan.
There are things like Anno's Counting Jar, which painlessly introduces arithmetic and the theory of sets. And so they're remarkably dense and incredibly accessible visual books for children.
Mm.
But
wow.
Anno's
hey,
Journey
thank
is,
you for that
is
I'll just be sure to check it out.
Because you know, it's an introduction to Europe for originally intended for Japanese children, of course. But it's universal.
Anno's Journey.
Yes.
Thank you, Frank.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Let's go to Pat in St. Cloud. Hello, Pat.
Hello. I was a Scholastic rep for 12 years in the trade division, and I was on board for both Harry Potter and the Hunger Games.
Oh.
We had a wonderful time. Great job. I'm retired, but I have had an interest in children's books for a very long time, and the one that I love is My Cat, The Silliest Cat in the World. It's written by Gillis Buckelet. It's published by, can't tell. Anyway, the illustrator uses an elephant as being the silliest cat in the world, and my grandchildren and I laugh our heads off until we get to the end. It's from the very beginning, and then they say, "Again, Nana," and we start all over again. And then my 11-year-old said, "Nana, let me read it," and it was wonderful.
Oh.
It's a great little book, and he's written a sequel to it as well. Don't like it as well, but this My Cat, the Silliest Cat in the World, is a charmer.
Hmm.
That's great. We're gonna add that to our list of
definitely lists of books to check out soon. If you like books about cats and animals, you might also like to check out the Chester books by now her name is going to escape me. I believe it's Melanie, but. The Chester books are really funny. They're very much about a cat who has a mind of his own, so I highly recommend those as well.
That would be Melanie Watt.
Melanie Watt. I knew I was close.
You were close.
Rosie in Madison writes, "I'd love to hear your opinions on the merits for young kids about reading books that draw attention to the female protagonists that make the point that girls can do anything they want. I'm thinking of my very favorite childhood series, The Enchanted Forest Chronicles, by Patricia, I don't know how to pronounce her name, W-R-E-D-E, which features an unconventional princess as the adventuring heroine."
Oh, that is the topic of the hour, I think. You know, we talked about The Hunger Games earlier with Katniss, who's such a great protagonist. There are several other books on our list, including Anne of Green Gables and Matilda, some of those who have strong female protagonists. I think, there were some studies done that showed that there were more male protagonists up until a certain point, but I feel like lately that female protagonists have taken the lead, and that's really important because it shows those young readers that no matter who they are, no matter how big, how small, what boy or girl, where they come from or where they live, if they come from a place like Katniss does or if they come from a place like, you know, Matilda, no matter what their family is or their background, they can achieve wonderful and amazing things. So that's the power of literature, is the ability to see beyond the circumstances that are just around you into the world of possibility. And these books have been doing that really well.
Chosen with an idea in mind, my mother always used to read, and it was a very simple book, but it doesn't have to be in a person to give you inspiration. It was The Little Engine That Could. I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. She read that over and over in the Golden Book, and I know she was saying something to me. I think you can.
Yeah, that is actually one of my life's mantras. My mother read that book to my sisters and I when we were young, and I have never forgotten it. I can still see in my mind the picture of the little blue engine chugging up the hill,
pulling
all of the hopeful animals and clowns and toys behind her.
Yeah.
It's an excellent lesson and one that will last you a lifetime.
It's number 24 on our top 100 list, by
the way. Oh, great. I'm so glad to hear that, and my mother would have been happy, too. Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed the hour, and it's great to talk about children's books. So we'll just carry on the reading after this show. Thank you both.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Thanks.
Happy reading.
Yeah, absolutely. To you, too. Nick Friedman, editor-in-chief of Scholastic, and Anna Bartas, senior editor at Scholastic. You can see the list at scholastic.com/100books. You can search Parent and Child's 100 Greatest Books for Kids on Facebook. So that's that. Happy reading. I want to go read children's books now. Well, thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program, and thanks to Brett Jaspers for on-air production.